everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's August 27th, 2013, a lovely day here in New York City. And I wanted to let you know what's going on with me at Responsible Eating and Living, my not-for-profit 501c3 organization. We just launched a new Swingin' Gourmets video. Now, I don't know if you caught part one of the Real American Barbecue with the Swingin' Gourmets. I hope you did, and if you didn't, you're going to have to catch up because it was a fun show. And now we have part two of the Real American Barbecue where we're making strawberry shortcake with cashew cream. And it's a fun 10-minute video. I hope you can check it out. It's at swingingourmets.com. You could find it there, or you could run over to the Responsible Eating and Living website and click on the TV tab. And it's the first video listed there under our food shows. So check it out. It's fun. And then let me know what you think at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Okay, let's bring on my first guest today. I'm going to be bringing back Ginny Messina. She's a registered dietitian with a master's degree in public health from the University of Michigan. She writes about vegetarian and vegan diets for both the public and health professionals and speaks on vegan diets at scientific events for health professionals as well as events for the public. She's a co-author of two books on vegan nutrition, Vegan for Life, and the recently released Vegan for Her, which we are going to be talking about today. She also co-authored a vegetarian textbook for health professionals, The Dietitian's Guide to Vegetarian Diets. And she blogs at theveganrd.com. Welcome, Ginny, to It's All About Food.
Yeah, hi, Karen. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So it looks like we've got a series going here. We got Vegan for Life, and now we got Vegan for Her. Are we going to get Vegan for somebody else later?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody is asking for Vegan for Him, so it might happen. You never know.
Well, I think so. But anyway, let's talk about Vegan for Her. Actually, there's probably a lot in the Vegan for Her book that men can take advantage of, too, but it's good to get a special focus for women.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. The general nutrition guidelines are applicable to men, and there's information about eating to reduce risk for heart disease and osteoporosis, all things that men need to be concerned about, too.
Right. But, you know, it is good to focus on women's issues. You know, I like to think that there is a basic diet that is going to work for everyone, and we're learning more and more about certain foods and what they can do, and we'll talk about some of them. But, you know, we are a little different from men, and we have our own special diseases. And it's nice to have special attention that is directed specifically at our physiology.
That's right, yeah. And of course, you know, even some nutrient needs are a little bit different for women. For example, I talk a little bit about iron and the fact that premenopausal women have higher iron needs and what that means on a plant-based diet. So, yeah, there are concerns that are very specific to women.
Let's talk a little bit more about that iron thing. So, as most women know, we create a little extra blood every month premenopause to get ready for possible child making, and that takes some extra nutrition.
Yeah, it does. It does, and that is the reason. The fact that women menstruate means that they lose iron every month, and therefore their iron needs are about twice what men need on a daily basis. And so women do need to pay attention to that. Plant foods are packed with iron. There's plenty in legumes and whole grains in particular. We need to eat those foods along with vitamin C-rich foods like strawberries and orange juice and leafy green vegetables because that enhances the absorption of iron from plant foods. So that's really important.
Well, that's kind of the nice thing about plant foods. They tend to come naturally packaged with the things they need to go with. Sometimes you want to combine some high vitamin C food with an iron food, but a lot of times the foods have so many different things in them, and we need all of them together.
That's right. I mean, for example, you could eat spinach. It's got both iron and vitamin C, so that's really ideal. And you know, the nice thing is that iron absorption is better regulated from plant foods. And once women hit menopause, their iron needs drop dramatically. And getting iron from plant foods is especially good in that case, because there are some dangers associated with iron overload in later in life, and vegan women are less likely to have to deal with that. Our iron stores are a little bit better regulated for optimal health than people who eat meat.
Yay us. Yeah, there's, you know, something that I got from this book is that there's a lot that we don't know. And there's a lot that we're learning more and more, but there's plenty out there that's kind of a mystery, and we need to learn a lot more. You talked early in the book about the different kinds of studies and articles that are available for us, the tests that are done, and we should talk a little bit about that, actually. But, you know, it's next to impossible to do a study that would need to be done to really determine what is the ideal diet for humans.
Yeah, it really is. And there, you know, there are some answers. There are some areas where we have so many unanswered questions, like in the relationship of diet to cancer, for example. We just have not been able to define exactly what people need to do and what they need to eat in order to lower risk for cancer. On the other hand, we do know that plant foods are so packed with phytochemicals, you know, these thousands of plant chemicals that seem to have myriad health benefits, all different kinds of health benefits related to cancer and heart disease. So the evidence points us towards eating more plant foods and fewer animal foods. And, of course, vegans don't eat any animal foods. And I think we can feel pretty confident that that's to our advantage when it comes to conquering chronic disease.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, people hear these little sound bites all the time and take all kinds of information out of context and get really confused. So just a little brief summary about what we should be paying attention to and what we shouldn't be paying attention to, or should we just buy your book and forget about it?
yeah, goodbye. You can just buy my book. The book has a food guide in it for vegans called The Plant Plate, and it summarizes very concisely, I think, the kinds of foods that we need to be sure to include in our diet to make sure we're meeting nutrient needs. For example, eating 3 servings of legumes every day. This is a food group that includes not just beans, but the vast array of soy products like tofu and tempeh and veggie meats. And also peanuts and peanut butter. For people who don't want to eat beans, have a peanut butter sandwich.
Yum.
It's that easy, yeah. And that easy and that familiar. So making sure you're eating legumes, eating whole grains. Everybody knows you're supposed to eat lots of fruits and vegetables, including some nuts and seeds in your diet. Really important for getting healthy fats and for optimal nutrient intake. So those are the kind of things we want to pay attention to. We don't need to think so much about whether your diet has the right amount of carbohydrate or the right amount of fat or whether you're getting too much protein. If you're getting these nutrients from plant foods, you're eating healthy carbs, healthy fats, healthy protein. You don't need to worry about the ratio so much.
I like that. And you call it intuitive eating at one point in the book, which I really like.
Yeah, I talked about that in the chapter on weight management, about the importance of developing intuitive eating, which means very simply, it's a simple definition, not so simple to do. What it means is eating in response to your body's hunger signals, not because it's 12 o'clock and it's time for lunch,
or you're
depressed. We all know we're supposed to do that. It's not so easy to do. It's something that you have to practice by sitting down and eating mindfully, listening to your body's hunger signals. It takes some time. It takes some practice. But for a healthy body weight especially, it's something that's really important to do.
Well, that's kind of a lesson for all life, just being mindful and paying attention and not just reacting and doing things mindlessly.
Right.
That's our work. You concentrate a bit all throughout the book on soy foods, and soy foods have gotten a lot of press over the last few decades. Some people are petrified of soy foods, unfortunately, and there's really not a lot to worry about, is there?
No, there's really not. The compounds in soy foods that people are concerned about are isoflavones, which are phytoestrogens. They're plant estrogens. People get confused thinking that they're the same thing as the hormone estrogen that mammals produce. They're not. They are treated very differently in the body. The way they bind to receptors in different cells is very different from estrogen. And the kind of long story short, or in a nutshell explanation, is that isoflavones sometimes act like estrogen, sometimes act in completely opposite ways to estrogen, or sometimes act in ways that just have nothing to do with hormones. And the evidence indicates, for example, that young girls who consume isoflavones during puberty or during adolescence, when their breasts are developing, the isoflavones somehow impact breast development in a way that confers lifelong protection against breast cancer.
Wow.
Not a guarantee, but lowers risk for breast cancer. So that's really exciting information about soy foods.
Yeah, and shows the importance of getting a good start with nutrition when you're young.
Right, and it's really interesting because the protection does seem to come at that particular time of life. If you start eating soy foods in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't confer the same protection.
Right.
It has to be during breast development. So it really is so important for young girls to be eating a healthy diet.
But it doesn't mean that if you're older, it's all over either, because the body is so forgiving, and when you start taking away the toxic food and cramming it with great nutrition, it really, really adjusts very nicely, and you can thrive.
Well, it does, absolutely. You know, we know certainly with conditions like heart disease and clogged arteries, boy, you can turn that around pretty rapidly by eating a healthy plant-based diet. So, yeah, all is not lost once you're an adult. You can really change your health through good food choices.
And I don't bring this up as much as I used to, but I guess I'm bringing it up right now. But, you know, I had advanced ovarian cancer, and I was a vegan for a long time, and I was hit with that. And I've asked myself many times what happened, and I have a story in my head. I figured it all out. But it definitely proved to me that these foods that I'm eating were so powerful in helping me get through the treatment and heal afterwards. So maybe my childhood was not the best nutritionally.
Yeah.
And left a lot of junk behind, but I'm here. And I'm here to talk about the power of plant foods.
Yeah. And I think, I think that there are two messages there. One is that, again, as I said, there are many unanswered questions when it comes to nutrition and chronic disease. We don't know how to be bulletproof against disease, but we do know how to maximize a healthy diet so that we can get the most mileage out of it possible.
You talk, too, about women who want to get pregnant and how important nutrition plays in fertility, and then what to do once a baby is born and how to feed yourself and to feed your baby. You're probably familiar with the Weston Price Foundation, and they have a lot of interesting information on their site.
Yeah, they do. Interesting would be a kind word.
Interesting. I don't recommend believing most of the things they say. But I remember reading that they recommended babies should be fed where the mother could chew up some meat in her mouth and then feed it back to the baby. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't think much of it. The idea, of course, is that red meat is rich in iron and zinc, and that babies need those nutrients, and there can be some very devastating effects when infants are not getting adequate iron and zinc and not having a healthy diet. But, of course, In the United States, most babies, when they're starting to eat solid foods, hopefully being breastfed before that, when they start to eat solid foods, they eat fortified cereals. And the research shows pretty well that those are just as effective in meeting a baby's iron and zinc needs as red meat, and certainly doesn't, you know, set a baby up for a lifetime of unhealthy eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
So I would stick with the breast milk and the fortified cereals, I think.
Okay, that sounds very good to me, too. There's just, you know, I don't know if it's something I've been socialized on, but it just doesn't sound appealing to me.
No, it doesn't sound very appealing to me either. And I guess maybe at one time in our evolution, you know, mothers may have done that when they didn't have access to the kind of foods that we have today. So I don't think it seems like an awful lot of trouble and not very appealing. I don't think women need to worry too much about that.
Right. And those magical isoflavones in soy foods, not only are they good inside our body, but you talk too about how they're good on our skin.
Yeah, there's some really exciting research coming down the pike on that, showing that both consuming soy foods and using isoflavones topically can reduce wrinkles. And, you know, it's not Botox or anything, but it's a lot more natural and a lot safer. So the research on that is pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, we don't really know the impact of Botox yet. It's so new.
Right.
And it scares me personally. But
yeah, I know. Me too. And isoflavones are a lot more natural and a lot less expensive, too.
Yeah.
Don't involve any needles.
It's just from a bean.
Yeah. It's either eat the bean or put the cream on your face. Both of those seem pretty easy and not very scary.
Okay, so while we're on the subject of beans, I love soy foods, but if you can't eat soy foods, if you're allergic, there is a whole world of wonderful legumes out there, all different sizes, shapes, colors. And you talk about the importance of eating beans in this book in a number of different places.
Right. And absolutely, you know, I hear from people all the time, oh, I would love to be vegan, but I can't eat soy foods or I don't like soy foods. Soy is not essential in vegan diets or in any kind of diet. If people don't like them or if they have soy allergies, you know, you can get all of the protein you need, all of the nutrition from eating other kinds of beans, the ones that are used so extensively throughout the world, like bean burritos and hummus and foods that we all love. And again, you can have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and get your legumes that way. So yeah, so soy foods are definitely, they're wonderful if you like them, but they are not essential by any means.
My partner Gary, he'd had weight issues most of his life and then found peace with a vegan diet, and one of his favorite foods is peanut butter, and as he grew up he was told he really couldn't eat it, and makes him very happy.
That he can have it now?
He eats it as much as he wants.
Yeah, yeah, peanut butter is one of my favorite health foods, actually. So, you know, just packed with protein and fiber and healthy fats. It's there are no protein-rich animal foods that can boast that kind of thing.
Mm. And then I was curious when, I forget where you were talking about it with beans, but comparing dried beans to canned beans. Canned beans, what exactly did you say? Did I
talk about the glycemic index?
Yes.
Yeah. One of the things that I really encourage women to do in this book is to choose slow carbs, carbohydrate foods that are digested slowly and that cause a slow, gradual rise in blood glucose levels, because that seems to be protective against a whole host of chronic diseases. So one of the issues is that the more beans are cooked, the faster they're digested. And so canned beans they're not as slowly digested as the beans that you cook yourself at home. Doesn't mean the canned beans are bad. All beans are good for you. And if you are too busy to cook your own beans, then by all means you should use canned ones. Because for some of us, you know, they're just so convenient, and it's way better than not eating beans at all. They're so good for you.
But there is a little difference in terms of the glycemic index.
Right, right. That's the only difference. Otherwise, canned beans are just as good. And they're still packed with fiber. You know, they're still help to lower blood cholesterol. They're still a really good choice.
Yeah, what I do at home is I buy tons and tons of canned beans as a emergency backup thing.
Right.
And then I most of the time I use dried beans, and then when I'm in a pinch, I grab a canned bean and kind of, I want to use the expression, freeze two birds with one key.
Yeah, that's a better expression.
But this way I have all this great backup food in case of an emergency. Of course, nothing's ever going to happen here in New York City,
right.
Ever. And then, you know, for quick food, it's there, but most of the time it's the dried beans. But I had never heard that there was a significant difference between them.
Yeah, and I talk about it only because if women are willing to cook beans from scratch, it's a better choice, but it doesn't mean that canned beans are a bad choice. I tend to buy canned chickpeas because they take longer to cook, and so I use the canned variety of those, and then all my other beans, lentils, black beans, kidney beans, all of those I cook from scratch because they don't take that long.
They're fast.
Yeah.
Okay. I dog-eared so many different pages in this book. There's just so many different things to talk about. I was also curious, can we talk a little bit about folic acid and folate? Because, well, I've heard that we really don't want to supplement folic acid because it can be problematic and that we should eat it from our dark green vegetables. But then you do recommend for pregnant women that they might supplement with some of it?
Yeah, for pregnant women or women who are thinking about becoming pregnant, and you know, the difference is that the B vitamin folate occurs naturally in a number of vegetables, especially leafy green vegetables, and also in beans and orange juice and oranges. Folic acid is the synthetic version of folate that is used to fortify foods, and it's also used in supplements. Folate, the B vitamin, folate or folic acid, two different forms of the same B vitamin, is extremely important in the early stages of pregnancy. It's extremely important for development of the embryo, normal, healthy development. And what we know from the science right now is that women who take folic acid supplements or eat foods that are fortified with folic acid have a much, much lower risk of birth defects. And so because, you know, probably we can get the same benefit from just eating foods that are rich in folate, but the research isn't there. So we're still recommending that women eat a diet that's rich in foods that provide natural folate, but that they also take a folic acid supplement. And the benefits of doing so far outweigh any risks associated with that, especially because we're just talking about pregnancy. We're not talking about doing this throughout your entire life.
Okay. And, oh, I just had something, and it just slipped away quickly. Very good. supplements in general. Now, you mentioned B12, and I'm glad you did, because still people need to know how important it is.
Yeah, it's so important. It's not, plant foods are not, do not naturally provide vitamin B12. It actually comes from bacteria. That's where all of the vitamin B12 in the world comes from. And so vegans do need to supplement with vitamin B12. I recommend 25 micrograms of vitamin B12 as cyanocobalamin. That's the form you should look for on the vitamin label. And it's, you know, it's not, it doesn't make us so unique. It's not a uniquely vegan issue because all people over the age of 50, whether they're eating meat or not, no matter how much vitamin B12 is in their diet, actually need to also be taking supplements because as we age, it becomes harder to absorb the vitamin B12 that's found in meat and milk. So vitamin B12 supplements are important for vegans. They're important for everybody over the age of 50.
You've been doing this a long time, Ginny.
I have, yes. I've been doing it about 30 years.
And last night I was celebrating my mom's 80th birthday with my father and my mom and a couple that's friends with them. And the wonderful thing is my mom and her friend just recently decided to give up animal foods. I think they're still eating maybe eggs occasionally, but they've given up the dairy and all the other stuff, and this is really great. And my parents' friend's husband has done this a couple years ago, so he's just looking phenomenal. And we were all laughing because all of their friends are always asking him, and now his wife and my mom, where do you get your protein?
Yeah.
That's a damn stupid question.
Yeah, it's a question that's been around for a long time.
How many times have you heard it in 30 years?
Yeah, a lot of times, absolutely. And, of course, it's, you know, we get our protein so easily on a vegan diet. Just again, legumes are packed with protein. They're so protein-rich, and there's also protein in grains and vegetables and nuts and seeds. So it's pretty easy.
You have a chapter, the last thing I wanted to talk about, because we just have a few more minutes left, and that's the female vegan athlete. And first of all, I want to say, yes, you go, girls. We can do it all. But we need some good food.
Yeah, and the thing that, and for all athletes, vegan or not, the thing that women need to be pay the most attention to is making sure that they're getting enough calories. Because when we see problems with female athletes, and again, this is not specific to vegans or vegetarians, it's for all female athletes, women who are over-exercising and not eating enough calories can develop amenorrhea, they lose their period, and that can have damaging effects to bone health and raise risk for osteoporosis. So just getting enough food is the number one most important thing for female athletes. And if you're getting them from, if you're getting enough calories from healthy plant foods, you're going to be getting lots of protein and carbohydrate and healthy fats automatically.
I was at a conference maybe 10 years ago, I think. It was a raw food conference, and there were a couple of young women talking about how they thought it was a good thing that they weren't getting their period anymore.
Oh, gee, that's really unfortunate to hear. It's very unhealthy to lose your period. That's just not normal development, and again, it can really have an extremely damaging effect on bone health.
Wow. Well, okay, now the last thing I want to know from you, since you've been doing this so long and educating so many people about a lot of different things, what are you eating? Are you eating some of these recipes that are in the back of the book, or what are you eating?
I love the recipes that are in the back of the book. I don't cook a great deal. I do bulk cooking every week and freeze things and put things aside. So I eat a lot of black bean burritos with guacamole and lentil soup and hummus sandwiches every day. And, of course, you know, lots of fruits and veggies and salads.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the food that you eat?
I think it's really good. I know it's really healthy, and
yeah.
I think it's really good.
I love my food. You know, you use a word occasionally, I think, rigid and restricted, and I don't think this diet is any of that. There are things that people realize they shouldn't be eating, but when you finally adjust your palate and taste buds, this is a fabulous diet.
It is a fabulous diet, and I do want people to know that the world of plant foods is extremely diverse and you know, really enjoyable, and there are no plant foods that we can't have. We've got lots of choices.
Okay, so stick to the plant plate. Jenny, thank you for talking to me, and for Vegan for Her, the Women's Guide to Being Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And her website is theveganrd.com. Check that out. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about chocolate. Luscious chocolate, vegan chocolate, ethical chocolate. Okay, we'll be right back.